This episode is brought to you by The Athlete's Foot. Welcome to The Wrap, a weekly podcast covering women's sports news. Bez, what have we got around the grounds this week?
Rugby league players call out the lack of a three-game State of Origin series. I love that. Chris Moore wins at the ranch and Collingwood withdraw from the Super Netball competition.
You're gripping your microphone tight. You're ready for a wild ride today.
No, I'm centered and calm.
For the key story, we will chat to pro triathlete Emma Pallant-Brown, whose response to embracing your period as an athlete has gone absolutely viral this past week. We'll get into it more in the key story, but we shared her response to a comment on Instagram of a photo of her competing in triathlon about that was showing her period, and there was a request from someone that the photo should have been cropped because it was unflattering. It's got almost 100,000 likes on our page, her response.
And the feedback is far and away about period positivity, and it's absolutely so refreshing that everyone is out there calling it out, being okay with it, and it's an absolutely natural thing that half of the population do.
So good.
So good. First day back at school today, friend.
I know. I don't know if I'm ready for it, actually. I was packing my backpack. My backpack is awfully full. It always is on day one.
Yeah, because you're repopulating your existence at the club. That makes sense?
I don't think I did a full clean out of my locker at the end of the season.
You're coming back for another year?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I hope there's no edible things in my locker.
Banana that's seen a better day.
Oh, the banana at the bottom of the backpack, that's always lethal.
No good. So are you excited for the season?
Yes, very excited. It's nice to be officially going into preseason because we have been training since January. So it's nice to be into proper training to get ready to start playing first weekend of September, which is still really far away, but we're getting closer.
I'd love a draw. I need to plan things.
Okay, I'll see what I can do.
Thank you.
Go the Giants.
Go the Giants.
Let's take a look around the grounds.
In surfing, Chris Moore is the queen of the surf ranch again. The Hawaiian five-time world champion defeated Caroline Marks in Kelly Slater's pool. I was like,
that's great.
In Kelly's
just
pool.
Just his swimming pool.
Just, you know when you used to, were a kid and you had the boogie board and you made the waves with it?
So good.
That's effectively what it
that's
is.
That's what it is.
Just on a little larger scale. She showed how lethal she is, laying down an almost perfect 9.67 on her right in the semifinal. The win means Moore will claim the yellow jersey from Tyler Wright heading into stop 7 of the tour in El Salvador.
Question, do they on average get better scores when they're at the ranch because of the predictability of the wave?
I think so. And it's actually quite interesting because there's so many natural footers on tour. So she got that 9.67 on her right. They have to surf on their backhand because you surf one right and one left.
Mm.
And it's interesting seeing that they, in general, most of the surfers do a lot more work on their forehand than their backhand.
Yeah, right.
So the left scores are a lot lower.
Yeah, how interesting.
Yeah. In some not so awesome surfing news, the Noosa Malibu Club has been fined for breaching Surfing Australia's prize money rules. The club has been issued a first and final warning for breaching Surfing Australia's pay parity rules by paying their women's champion 30% less than the men's winner. The club awarded Brazilian Augusto Olinto $718 for claiming first place in the open division of the annual Noosa Logger competition held over the first weekend in May. And in direct comparison, the women's winner, American Mason Schremer, was presented with $505 in prize money.
It makes absolutely no sense. There's very clear rules in place now around this. And this story almost would have made more sense if we were talking about tens of thousands of dollars. Like, why on earth would you do that over $200?
So weird.
So strange.
Surfing Australia CEO Chris Matter said, "It's pretty straightforward. We have a rule book, as Chloe pointed out, that says clubs must offer equal prize money to men and women in events affiliated with Surfing Australia. We've asked the club to compensate the female winner and rectify the situation." Noosa Malibu Club President Glenn Gower.
I'm so mad about this.
Said Surfing Australia's integrity unit had spoken with him about the issue, but he did not believe that the club had an issue. He said, "The Noosa Logger treats everyone as equals by allowing women to enter the open division alongside men and distributes prize money in proportion to the number of places offered in each division."
Someone needs to explain to this man what equity actually means.
Should we reach out to him?
I'd love to. I've got a few images that I could send him.
Next week's key story, Chloe talks to Glenn Gower. So good. I'm here for it. In person. Let's fly out to Noosa.
Let's do it.
It's a bit cold. I'm here for that. Female competitors had actually approached the board of the Noosa Malibu Club prior to the tournament and in requesting to make the prize money equal, but their concerns were unfortunately not heard. Longboarder Lucy Small, who we've spoken to on the wrap before, who's co-founder of Equal Pay for Equal Play, said, "It's pretty disappointing, really, to keep seeing this happen. We're at a point where everyone just needs to accept equal prize money as the status quo. That's where the expectation of the community and of the surfers and of the media is."
And I think following on from Lucy's point, there should be an expectation now when sponsors are approaching clubs and organisations like this, that if a sponsor wants to specifically sponsor the men's competition, sorry, it doesn't work like that anymore. If you're going to sponsor this event, you sponsor both the men's and the women's.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
In rugby league, game one of the State of Origin will be played on Thursday night. I'm excited. I'm going to be there.
State against state.
Mate against mate. And although the series has been extended.
A little bit of advertising that worked its way into our childhood and has not left.
Oh, dead. Where was I even up to? Okay, so although the series has been extended from one game to two, there's a lot of questions around why you would make it a two-game series, not three. Because we know in sport, sometimes someone wins one game, the opposition wins the other game, then you've got to have a decider. Best of two doesn't work. Actually, in any scenario in life, best of two doesn't work.
No, because you can share.
Exactly.
And sharing
right.
is not winning.
So New South Wales star Millie Boyle has spoken out during the week saying that the potential of the series being decided by for and against should each team win one game was ridiculous. She said, considering the guys have been playing three games for so long and went straight from one off to three games, I don't know why it's taken so long for us to get there. We're nearly there, but two games seems ridiculous, to be honest. It's great to have another one, but it doesn't really feel fair if it's a one-all draw. We have great viewership for our games. If it's one-all, don't you think the decider would be the biggest game and the best one to watch? Yes, Millie, I do completely agree with you there. Oh, she's keen to back up last year's 20-14 victory and is excited that the two-game series will give the teams a chance to build some continuity. She said, previously, we've never had the chance to analyze and improve on the game we've just played. We always just had to dump it and the next year we'd have new players, maybe a new spine, maybe a new coach. There's no doubt the second game we play together will be better than the first because this is our first game together and you don't always get it right the first time. And it's one of those, I think, probably really tricky scenarios where that female athletes are put in very often where it's like you've been asking to go to three games. We can't give you that right now, but we're going to give you two and you should be really grateful that we've given you two.
Over and over again, you have to, I think somewhat, once, especially once you've been, if you've been in women's sport for a long time, you really have to shift that mindset for just being grateful for some of the pie and, oh, you know, we should be grateful. Absolutely not. Like a two-game series is, as Millie said, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've actually confirmed that like it's going to, instead of, I think there was initial thought that because New South Wales are the holders of the trophy, that if they won one, that was enough, but now they've confirmed it's going to be based on for and against. And then, like, there's a whole, if the for and against is the same across the two games, there's this, like, whole list of first try scorer and just, it's just, again, also, that seems so much work. Just make it three games.
Just make it three games. That kind of reminds me of, like, under 12s, like, count back kind of thing.
Maybe they should share the trophy.
Split it down the middle.
1 week each. Everyone gets a turn.
Boyle is going to lead a new look forward pack with a number of regular New South Wales players missing due to injury. Caitlin Johnson, knee, Holly Wheeler, knee, and Samima Taufa, shoulder, have all been ruled out of the series, while Hannah Southwell is 9 months post ACL surgery and not quite ready for a return. I think she's due back in about July, hopefully, for NRLW. New South Wales will host their first women's origin game in Sydney since 2019 and have never lost on home turf. In a big omen ahead of game one at CommBank Stadium. We'll also witness some history being made on Thursday when Jessie Southwell becomes the youngest ever New South Wales Origin debutante. Southwell turned 18 in February and will be 5 days younger than Brad Fittler was when he pulled on the blue jersey for the first time. That's a cool stat, isn't it?
Really cool. Go well, Jessie. In golf, The Ladies Professional Golf Association, or LPGA, recently launched a range of affordable golf clubs, accessories, and shoes for female beginners and juniors in the United States.
Love this.
When we do look at, you know, there's a lot of research done as to what prevents women and females from staying in sport, cost is up there.
Absolutely.
And especially a sport like golf. It's not a cheap sport to equip you, to deck yourself out in.
And it's kind of, I'll let you get into the story. I've got a lot to say today, apparently. But it's interesting in golf because, like, you often joke, right, like if you've got a kid who's going to play sport, golf or tennis, because then they can earn lots of money. But it's one of those scenarios where you've got to have lots of money in the first place to even get a foot in the door. So I think this is just so important from an access point of view.
The equipment is available at over 1,000 Walmart stores across America and online. Affordable clothing and equipment, like we said, touches on one of golf's largest barriers to participation. That's high costs. And it's an authentic way to boost brand connection. So Walmart, like, killing it. Killing it.
Great.
The LPGA has been a longtime supporter of programs and initiatives for female beginners and juniors, and reports that currently more than 500 girls' golf sites across the USA run programs that impact more than 100,000 young women each year. Matt Chimura, LPGA Chief Marketing Communications and Brand Officer, said, "This incredible partnership with Walmart builds upon our organization's commitment to empowering, inspiring, and transforming the lives of girls and women through the game of golf. We know that women comprise about a quarter of all golfers in the US, and we also know there's an opportunity to improve that ratio. By providing affordable entry-level golf equipment, we look forward to helping even more women and girls experience the lifelong benefits of this great game." Love it.
In cricket, Aussie skipper Meg Lanning has been ruled out of the Women's Ashes due to medical issues. Lanning returned to the Australian team in January after a four-month mental health break and led the team to the T20 World Cup win in March. She followed the World Cup with a stint in the inaugural Women's Premier League in India. Cricket Australia Women's Cricket Performance boss Sean Flegler said, "It's an unfortunate setback for Meg, and she's obviously disappointed to have been ruled out of the Ashes. It's a significant series for the team and she'll be missed, but she understands the need to put her health first." Meg will remain at home where she will continue to work with medical staff with the aim to return to playing as soon as possible. We ask that Meg's privacy is respected at this time. So Elisa Healy has been named to captain the Aussies in the Ashes, and all-rounder Tali McGrath will be vice-captain of the team. The one-off women's test gets underway in Nottingham on June the 22nd, with three T20s and three ODIs to follow in the multi-format series. The English Cricket Board confirmed last month that nearly 70,000 tickets had already been sold. The total is more than the previous two women's Ashes in the UK combined, and a sellout has been announced for the series finale in Taunton.
So great.
How good is that? So I think at a similar time in 2019, it was about 32,000 ticket sales. So the fact it's already at 70K is huge growth.
Massive. And plenty of time to get around it. And if you're in the UK, buy tickets and go along. In football, on Saturday night, Sam Kerr scored twice as Chelsea beat bottom of the table Reading 3-0 to secure their fourth consecutive Women's Super League title. Go Chelsea. The win completed the domestic double for the Blues after they also won the FA Cup last month. It was the closest WSL title race in a while, with Manchester United, Manchester City and Arsenal all pushing Chelsea the whole way. Chelsea rose to the occasion and won their last seven games in a row to finish a season. That's impressive, under pressure.
Very impressive.
They're also playing in Europe and cup ties as well at that same time. So
yeah, there's a lot going on, wasn't there?
Really, really impressive. Kerr added more trophies to her cabinet. We've discussed the size of Sam's cabinet before.
She needs a whole house.
A factory.
Yes.
She's a trophy. She's just a trophy factory.
That's good. I like that.
So her trophies that were added to the cabinet were the Chelsea Players Player Award and the Player of the Season as voted by fans. I love the Peer Award.
The Peer Award is the best one, hands down.
Always. Easily the most gravitas. She was her wonderful real self after the match when she told Sky Sports, "If I'm scoring goals, people will say it's not about stats. And if I'm not scoring, it's about the stats. I just do whatever. I keep lifting these trophies and I don't really care what people say about me, honestly. I'm in the greatest team in England. I'm happy. The team's happy. It's not about me. It's about the team."
So good. Love that.
I just keep lifting trophies.
How good. It's what you're there to do.
Ellie Carpenter's Olympic Lyonnais also won a big trophy on the weekend when they secured their record-breaking 16th consecutive French league title.
16.
Literal domination.
Is anyone going close to them?
This year I think was a bit closer than had been in previous years, but yeah.
Wow.
Seriously impressive winning streak. They've won the title every year since 2006.
It's a long time. I feel like Ellie Carpenter wasn't even born that long ago.
She probably wasn't. Carpenter was named in the Division 1 Femin Team of the Season for the third consecutive season, despite missing half the season after returning from her ACL injury.
Very cool.
Huge season. All right, you two, now get ready for some World Cup winning, please, and thank you.
Get ready.
With all your other powers, but just you two, because we've spoken about you in particular.
This episode is brought to you by The Athlete's Foot, proudly supporting women in sport since 1976. Start every game on the right foot with the right fit. Get fitted in store today or online at theathletesfoot.com for netball, football, running, and recovery. Now that's fit. In netball, Collingwood confirmed last week that they will withdraw from the Suncorp Super Netball competition at the end of the 2023 season. The club said it made the decision following a review focusing on the viability of the club's netball program into the future. The decision has left the club devastated, and the players released a joint statement last week expressing their surprise and disappointment at the decision. What probably did surprise me, and I'll get to the statement part of it, was the fact that they did take a pretty strong aim at Netball Australia.
Very interesting, wasn't it?
Mm. So it read in part, as a playing group, the decision has been overwhelming. The impact on each athlete has been significant, and the prospect of playing out the remaining games right now seems inconceivable. We acknowledge the club has been transparent with the commercial realities that led to this decision. We acknowledge the club has also accepted the program could have been better. We appreciate and respect their candidness. As athletes, we consider ourselves part of the netball program and acknowledge we also had a role to play in the program's viability. Success on the court translates to commercial game. However, we feel compelled to highlight the role, or lack thereof, Netball Australia played in today's decision. We feel like collateral damage is a much larger issue for Netball Australia. There is untenable dysfunction and disharmony between administration and the playing group. There is also no confidence in the strategic direction of Netball Australia. We call on greater governance, transparency, and leadership from Netball Australia.
So there's obviously, and you, we both know, being on the inside of organisations and sports, you're privy to more information than the general public is. You're right. I was pretty shocked at how hard they went at NA in that statement, because for me, I think if my club admitted that they could have run a better netball program, I'd be pretty filthy at them first.
Yes, I think it's kind of strange that rather than being frustrated about that piece, they've just been like, thanks for being honest and candid with us.
Yeah.
And I did also find it, I respect the fact that the players have put their hand up and said, we know that we are part of the product that needs to be sold and that success is a part of that. But I also don't imagine the caliber of players that exist at Collingwood Netball Club that they've been rocking up and just having a lazy go at training and not really trying just very hard.
Going through the motions. Totally agree. It was a strong statement. It was an interesting statement. I think there's definitely something going on there with Netball Australia that we are not aware of.
I would agree.
Collingwood Chief Executive Craig Kelly conceded the club mishandled its netball program and at the same time reaffirmed its support for their women's Aussie rules programs through the VFLW and AFLW. The Magpies played and lost to the Sunshine Coast Lightning on Saturday and were showing some amazing support from the Lightning fans. It was pretty emotional, really. They received a standing ovation when they entered the court. Magpies co-captain Jeevan Mentor called on the game to show some common sense. Unfortunately, common sense is not as common as we would think, is it? And said, I want everyone to get in a room and put egos aside and just nut this out. There are lives at stake now. It's people who have to pay mortgages, who don't know where the next income is coming from. We have a whole lot of people who will be unemployed.
Netball Australia said on Sunday the league hoped to be in a position to announce the process on bidding for the 8th licence in the next 24 to 48 hours. Which was...
They got to get a wriggle on.
Yeah. And CEO Kelly Ryan said the plan was to have the 8th licence in place before contracting begins at the end of September. There's a lot to do because there's already a lot up in the air because of the agreement for the players between Netball Australia that hasn't yet happened.
Which I imagine is also probably where a lot of that frustration from the players towards Netball Australia comes from. Is
correct,
the fact that CBA is still up in the air.
Yes, exactly. So Ryan confirmed the Magpies had approached the governing body on multiple occasions to highlight their struggles, but said Netball Australia couldn't provide additional funding to the club to continue their netball program as the funding needed to remain equal across all 8 teams in the competition. There were allegations last week that Collingwood used their netball program to win funding for a facility upgrade for women's sport. Nine journalist Caroline Wilson, who often doesn't hold back, she had a crack at the club for abandoning their netball program after receiving public funding from the government, in part due to the netball program being in place. Collingwood said that they felt they would have received funding for upgraded women's facilities through an AFLW license, which is similar to other AFL clubs.
That was pretty brutal. And if you're looking at it in black and white, they absolutely received government funding because they had a netball program in place that they've now just exploded. Fox Sports netball program center circle host Hannah Hollis spoke about the statement from Collingwood that acknowledged we could have run a better netball program at Collingwood and explained that whilst there are many layers to it, some of the layers include working harder to grow audiences and membership. This could have been done by better fixturing to avoid clashes. I think Caitlin Bassett, to be honest, so former Diamond Caitlin Bassett, she kind of summed it up. She questioned Collingwood management saying, how early did they identify this, that they could have done more? What were they willing to make changes on? Did they expect to sit back and think organically everything was just going to grow and audiences and members would grow out of nothing?
It's a great point, Caitlin.
I love that, Caitlin. Mm. Again, like it's really sad. We're witnessing once again an organisation that needed to invest for growth and just didn't, chose not to because I think they probably want to spend their money on men's AFL.
And it's really sad just thinking about the livelihood of those players and staff involved in the program. There's a lot up in the air for them.
Very, very hard times.
In a bit more football news, so there's a platform called DAZN, who we know is quite prominent in football. Did I say
DAZN
it wrong?
Oh. DAZN.
It's a stupid name. It's DAZN. It's not in I always call it DAZN. DAZN.
DAZN. Pronounced DAZN.
Like, where's the vowel in there? There's a platform that prominently features in football called DAZN, even though it's spelled DAZN. Should be DAZN.
There's some great research from producer Bailey there that keyed us up on the fact that DAZN is not DAZN and it's in fact DAZN.
DAZN's free UEFA Women's Champions League UWCL broadcasts are paying serious dividends. The streamer published a survey last week showing that its 2-year experiment to show the Women's Champions League free on their YouTube channel broadened the audience and increased sponsorship interest. The exposure means the competition has increased its commercial proposition ahead of the 2023-24 campaign, which will see the competition mostly broadcast behind a paywall. Some of the exceptional findings from Crux Sports Value and Impact Report found that 80% of fans say coverage on DAZN's YouTube increased their awareness of women's players. 57% of survey respondents have an increased desire to follow women's players and clubs. 40% now have an increased interest in attending live women's matches. 46% of fans said the Women's Champions League content on YouTube made them like women's soccer more. 18% of those surveys said it changed their perception of women's soccer. Clubs have also benefited, with 77% saying the coverage has increased sponsor interest. 54% of clubs surveyed said the YouTube content had a positive impact on revenue in different ways.
There's some pretty great numbers.
There's some great numbers. What is a little bit confusing is that it's been free content. It's received amazing traction and some great stats to back it up, and then it's going to go behind a paywall.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I guess, economic prospect. I think, and I guess they've used it as almost an experiment to say, let's make it free, let's get these people on board, and then we'll make them pay for it.
Which I guess that's how a lot of business models work, right?
Business things, not my forte. Veronica De Quattro, what a great name. She's four Veronicas. Veronica De Quattro, DAZN's Chief Executive Global Markets, said, our partnership with YouTube has been a huge success, as Crux Sports Value and Impact Report demonstrates. We expected to see significant growth in viewership. When you combine DAZN's production values with YouTube's reach and UEFA's high level of competition, it's a winning formula. To hear about the increase in commercial and sponsorship interest, match day attendances and visibility in other media is especially pleasing. We want to help the women's game realize its potential by reaching audiences and by developing its obvious commercial appeal to create a virtuous circle of investment, growth, raising standards, and overall interest. We and UEFA feel the time is right for the competition to start finding its true commercial value. Visibility must lead to viability.
Is that a t-shirt?
It's in bold. Someone put it in bold on the research.
Someone. I don't know who did it, but someone did.
It's true though. Visibility will lead to viability.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Very true. Let's take a look at the key story. Earlier this week, we shared a photo on our Instagram. The photo was of a pro triathlete named Emma Pallant-Brown, who was competing over in Europe. And in the run leg of the race, she was during her, I guess, a heavy part of her menstrual cycle and had bled onto her swimwear. You had to zoom into the photo to notice it, but someone did notice it on the photo that was posted. Her response to that comment has gone viral. We've had, as I said in the introduction, we've had over 100,000 likes, I think, now on that photo alone, which is pretty mind-blowing. I actually got the chance to catch up with her online. She jumped on for a chat. She's an incredible athlete and a powerful woman, so it's a really cool opportunity to hear what she had to say about it. Emma, thank you so much for coming online for a chat. I wanted to ask you to start us off. You've already had a really successful career as a runner, but how was it that you found yourself becoming a triathlete?
Yeah, so started out as a runner and then was injured. And to begin with, I kind of was just cross-training like cycling and swimming just to keep fit, and the idea always being that I go back to running. But I was mentored at the time by Kelly Holmes. And she had a charity that London Triathlon, she had some entries for. So it was like, why don't you do a race like at the end of all this so that you have something that you're training for? And I was hooked. I did the triathlon, like I was chasing all day, and it was just so hard that I was like, I love this challenge. And yeah, I kind of got hooked by it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Just recently, there was a photo of you in a comment that's gone viral where someone posted a comment saying, requesting that the photo should have been cropped and that it was an unflattering picture. What was your initial response to seeing the picture and seeing a comment like that?
Yeah, I think it's something that really hard kind of hit home with me, because if I'd shown that picture to growing up, I was on UK Athletics funding, and I worked really hard with my coach, with the UK doctor, both guys, and they were pushing to get my period back because I lost it for a good few years. And I just thought, if I showed them that picture, they would be celebrating. They'd go out for a meal and we'd be having, yeah, we'd be like, hooray. And I think because it was something that was so hard for me to have the period and to be normal and healthy as an athlete again, I thought, yeah, it was just something that should never be taken out, should never be kind of hidden over. And the amount of comments that I've had, I think it's been actually really important to have these open, healthy conversations, because a lot of people wrote to me initially agreeing with the comment and being like, yeah, I think everyone I know would want, like if I'd messed myself in a race, I would not want a photo of me up there. And I was then saying the background of why it's not the same as, yeah, going to the loo in the middle of the race. It's why it meant so much to me. And yeah, opinions kind of, I think people then understood and looked into it a lot more.
Yeah, even when I saw your comment, I think it was a really powerful moment for me. Like I think about playing sport, being an athlete, but just in daily life, like I think about being a teenage girl when I had my period and saying to one of my friends, like, oh, can you just check me if I was in a pair of white shorts or something? Can you just check to make sure that I haven't bled through? Like, I think that's such a common experience for not just teenage girls, but so many women. So I think it's really resonated with thousands and thousands of people across the world. Has that surprised you, the response to it?
Yeah, I think it's that thing of, I think it was a big eye opener coming here to South Africa. And when they have Women's Month, I did a talk just with some young girls, and like the fear behind it and the association with it still being such a dirty thing. Whereas to me, it was such like a life-changing moment when I got my period back. I felt like, wow, like I'm now in control of my body again, and I'm a healthy, strong athlete, and I'm running PBs. And to get that message across, sometimes you can say things, but it's not as like strong as actually showing girls. And just to change that stigma around it being like, we talk about dignity and for it not to be that fearful, unspoken, dirty kind of thing that you hide, but be like, wow, like you have your period and you're performing as an athlete. And I think, yeah, just the messages, like you say, the amount of people and different, but everyone feels, it seems like, very different about having their period and how they race on their period. But every woman like can kind of resonate to it, which is such a powerful thing. Cause I think, yeah, we're athletes, but first and foremost, we are women.
We talk a lot about, on the podcast, we talk a lot about this movement that we're starting to see, probably more in the team sport space, of like a shift from certain teams that might have worn white shorts as the away shorts, and they're moving to wearing maybe navy shorts to make it something that's more comfortable and I guess means that there could be less anxiety for the players. Do you think in the triathlon context that there's anything that could make people more comfortable, or do you think that moments like this where you've kind of called it out can start that shift in people's attitudes, that it shouldn't be something that you're super anxious about?
Yeah, I definitely think it's having that variety of choice. I think like the responses that you've had, like everyone feels differently about it. And if you can make a lady feel as comfortable as possible to be out there and be racing, then comfort for people means a lot of different things. And I think, like, again, with all the advice, I put it out there to try and inspire some people, but I've learned so much about it myself and so many recommendations of, you can use this disc, you can use this cup, and like things that I'm just looking into and that will definitely make me feel more comfortable racing and be more practical. And the more women can talk and spread that word and have the discussions with brands about, okay, is there, like I was talking to an underwear company that are creating this kind of absorbing material. And again, if that's something that can be more comfortable and more practical and more women will be happy to train and race on, then yeah, how can we put that into suits and how can we put that into just kits and just making it as easy as possible, because it's just one of those extra barriers that I really think in this day and age, like there's so much practical things that we can do. But then like foremost, the most important thing being, if there is something visible, that it really is nothing shameful and just, yeah, like just it really is normal, and be like, cool, like awesome for her, go for it.
Yeah, it's such a powerful message. And I know there was tens of thousands of people on our page alone that wanted to say thank you and to kind of acknowledge how much courage you had and just being comfortable and starting that conversation. So thank you so much for that and for coming on and having a chat with us. I really, really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much. No, it's like amazing. And yeah, I already knew there were so many amazing sportswomen out there, but sure. Yeah, it's just incredible. I love it. Thank you so much.
No problem at all.
Let's take a look at what to watch. The 2023 Wheelchair Rugby National Championships will be held this weekend at the Gold Coast Sport and Leisure Centre. If you've never watched any wheelchair rugby.
So good.
Oh, it's brutal. It's so good. Games begin on Friday with the gold medal match scheduled for Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. So if you're on the Gold Coast, you can buy tickets at wheelchairrugby.com.au. And if you're not on the Gold Coast, you can catch it all live on Foxtel NKO.
How good's that? In rugby league, game one of the State of Origin is on Thursday. Do not miss this one. The New South Wales Blues v Queensland Maroons battle will kick off at 7:45 p.m. at Combank Stadium in Parramatta and will be live on the Nine Network, Foxtel and KO.
The New South Wales Derby is on Sunday in the Suncorp Super Netball. The Swifts and the Giants face off at Ken Rosewall Arena. The match starts at 2 p.m. and is live on Foxtel and free on KO Freebies.
We love free-to-air.
The Giants.
Go the Giants. Oof. And that's the wrap.
That is the wrap. See you next week, friend.
It was a bit of a mess, but we made it through.
Oof. It's a rappy mess.
Bye.